Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 694, December 2023.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell, and this is an edition of the Old Movie Club, in which we talk about a movie. Well, it's more like the 50th Anniversary Movie Club, as we talk about 1973, and in particular, a movie famous for its last line of dialogue, but you know, there's 96 and a half minutes before that happens. It's Soylent Green, or if this was Jeopardy, what is people? Let me join. Speaking of people,
it's not Jeopardy, though, right?
It's not clear. Jeopardy. Speaking of which, there are people here, and by the end of this episode, hopefully, none of us will have been turned into Soylent Green. Annette Wierstra joins me. Hello.
Hello. I would just like to say Tuesday is Soylent Green Day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Indeed, it is. Jean McDonald is here. Hi, Jean.
I can't believe I finally got to see this film.
You suggested it. I'm just going to say, you said, hey, Soylent Green, a movie that, I hadn't seen either before this episode. But
okay.
50-year-old movie, big pop culture reference. Might as well watch it. Monty Ashley's also here. Hello.
Just Monty. It's perfectly legal.
It's perfectly legal. It's true. It's true. Dr. Drang is here to talk about a movie that is, 50 years old. That's pretty on brand. Hello.
Yeah. When I was a kid, food was food.
And he loves a good light classical music, Philip Michaels.
Yeah. An old movie that I didn't pick, huh?
No, you didn't pick it.
If this is anyone other than Shelley Brisbane, you're stealing my bit.
Yeah, that's right. It's a 50-year-old movie club, sort of. So you're here. It's sort of. Kind of makes it old movie club, but not really.
Why,
I don't know.
Why not? Why not?
Hmm. Sure, why not? So Soylent Green, based on, I didn't realize this, based on Harry Harrison's novel Make Room, Make Room, which I know about but have never read. This is an era of science fiction writers and some scientists and some other people in the culture warning about the dangers of overpopulation, which is definitely part of this movie and very much part of the book. There were some other books around this time that were similar. Stand on Zanzibar comes to mind, where it was all about overpopulation and ecological disaster. Greenhouse effect is mentioned in the movie. So like I should mention it's set in the horrible future of 2022.
They're not far off.
Was the actual 2022 better or worse than this movie?
Well, yeah, it's true.
It's tough call.
I would say it was better, but I would say that if you brought somebody involved in the making of this movie to our 2022, they would probably say something like, so not too bad, huh? Like, I got it pretty close, didn't I? It's like not as extreme. But like, this is a world beset with overpopulation and global warming, horrible pollution, food shortages. It is,
If they had just said it in 2020, they would have been nailed it. Got it.
Yeah. It is interesting to think about how it matches up with reality. And again, reality is not as extreme as this, but I didn't even mention the incredible gap between the rich and the poor, where the rich live in their little guarded communities that come with furniture.
Great furniture.
By women that come with the place that the men can keep or not as they do. And of course, it's the men who buy these apartments. Anyway, that is going on. So there's the women who are the furniture who come with a place. Charlton Heston is a cop. His uniform appears to be a hat. But he does have a badge.
A nice hat.
It also seems to be a cravat-based economy that we're that we're working in the future.
Well, you can't wear heavy outfits because it's just too hot. You get so sweaty. Oh, so sweaty. It's just so hot. Charlton Heston. At one point, Charlton Heston takes a shower, which is a miracle because he doesn't have access to a shower. And he's like, ah, this is so great. And he's got his rope or whatever. And he's like, oh, this is the best. Next scene, super sweaty again because, you know, what can you do? You can't escape it. It's just very hot. But the plot is funny. So having not seen this movie, all I know is Soylent Green is people, right? Which, you know, it's kind of a bummer. That's, I guess, sort of the twist ending. But he is a cop investigating a murder, and we see the murder of Joseph Cotton, who is a man who lives in an apartment with furniture. And it's Cheryl is her name. And he's got
and a
body
and a video game, Jason.
And a video game that looks very much like an Atari 2600 game, which for a movie made in 1973, I mean, they projected the future. It was only 10 years in the future instead of 50, but pretty good. And of course, he's got a bodyguard. Chuck Connors, the rifleman himself, is his bodyguard. But they go to they go out to do some shopping, and he and there's a some shady character has given a kid like a crowbar basically, and told to kill this guy. And when the kid comes in, breaks into the place to kill him, Joseph Cotton basically says, "Go ahead, I deserve it."
When the kid gets told to kill that guy, he says, "If I live to be 100, I'll never understand this stuff." And the guy just says, "You won't."
It's yep, yep. And so Charlton Heston's job as a police officer or a detective, I guess, at the NYPD in this disastrous world is to investigate the murder. But there's so many murders. And also, I guess, you know, he might get paid, but mostly what you do when you're a cop and you investigate a rich guy's murder is take a bunch of stuff from his apartment. And so he does. He takes soap. He takes food. He takes all sorts of stuff.
This was the part of the movie that I liked.
He takes a spoon.
How corrupt everything is with the where he's taking the stuff and he's got to give kickbacks to
Brock Peters, his boss.
And his boss,
the guys who come and take the body. He has to give them a kickback too. Yes.
Because, Jason, you know me, I can take or leave sci-fi, but I love the film noir, and this has a very film noirish element to it, where it's the kind of seedy detective guy trying to solve things and ends up finding himself on the side of good against his better judgment. And so that part of the movie I liked.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. That is, I mean, like, the movie up front is like, hey, here's Charlton Heston. He's our star. He's going to steal a bunch of stuff. Like, okay, that's the thing. But, you know, that's it's getting across as in as many ways as possible that this is a fallen world, right? Like, even the cops are just completely, utterly corrupt. Like, literally nobody even thinks anything of him going through and taking the bourbon and, you know, taking the soap later and the spoon from the table. Although that's got that's a clue. Okay, so he takes the spoon because it's a clue. But I think
he even takes the pencil from Chuck Connors. Just I need everything.
I want it's evidence that I will take home to where he lives with an old man, Saul, who is played in his final film role. He was dying as they shot this movie. Edward G. Robinson as Saul. Who is they have to pedal a bicycle to keep to charge the battery and keep the lights on. Although, make room. Part of the idea here is that what if the world was so overpopulated that, like, literally there was no space anywhere? This was definitely a thing in the late 60s and early 70s where they talked about this. There's that Star Trek episode where there's a whole planet like that. Like, they've done that. I was struck that not only is this an overpopulated world, but it's also Manhattan. And I don't know. Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson's apartment, you know, it's not big, but it's okay. Like, I thought you got people sleeping out on the steps, out on the stairs, but they've got a little bit of space. There was a lot of disparity there. I mean, obviously the rich people have a lot of space, but I felt the movie trying really hard to make the overpopulation thing happen in some scenes, but there'd be like all this overpopulation and then there'd be another scene where there was space and people were walking like around, and I thought it was inconsistent, I guess is what I'm saying, but I get what they were going for.
I think what they're trying to do is do this three-tiered class system where you have the very rich people, then you have the working schlubs like Charlton Heston, who, because he's got a high-ranking police job, gets the apartment in New York, and then everyone else has to sleep wherever, and because it's so hot out, they that's why the streets are so empty. I think that's... They do the, there's lots of room to move around because they have that thing with the curfew at night, so everyone has to go hide, or it's too hot to be outside. Mm. So I think it's a little bit of stagecraft to where they don't want 300 extras in every scene that they're having to film.
Yeah, it's definitely a cost savings thing because, they shoot a lot at night, and you don't go out at night. Okay, great. I guess I think it's because it's dangerous. Maybe more than anything else, because certainly you'd want to be out at night if it's so hot,
right?
As opposed to being in the day. But there were so many scenes where, Chuck is the only person on the street, or the two Chucks are the only people on the street. It's very weird for a New York with 40 million people crammed into it. And oh my God, this is awful, awful, awful. And, I can run down a street and there's no one around.
Yeah, this alley is empty.
The original working title was Too Many Chucks.
I do think it's really interesting, though, that it's kind of a post-apocalyptic movie, but really it feels like just barely pre-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
And most post-apocalyptic movies, like, let's say, The Omega Man, go with a deserted world with Charlton Heston wandering around. I thought it was really interesting to go the other way, because the scenes where there's a lot of people, I don't want that. I don't want to have to hop over people going down the stairs.
Right. I like that the one guy is like, hey, watch it, buddy. I'm like, look, do you know what world you're in? People are on stairs. This is what happens. But it is the slow apocalypse almost, right? It's the idea that the world is coming apart, but these people have to live through it, which is why you get that nostalgia like Saul keeps talking about, like, back in the day, right? And when you go to the suicide chamber, they like show you open space and things like that. It's like, look, it's so beautiful back when there were deer and there was grass and it was really nice, which... So obviously this is just a disaster and there's no food and there's no water. Again, talking about one of those things that is totally true is there are and have been places in the world where there's no drinking water and you have to go to the community, space where they're delivering a small amount of water to everybody. And so seeing that scene where the people are going to get the water and Saul goes to get the water, I'm like, there's a city in South Africa, I think, where that actually happens now that they like ran out of water. It's closer to reality than you might think. But the movie is what I read about it is, it doesn't have a very big budget. And so they try to do those overpopulation scenes in a few places, but they can't sustain it. They can't afford to sustain it. So they give you the flavor of it.
Yeah, I think it's just that one scene, right? In the marketplace.
Yeah. Well, also the people laying around
and in the
everywhere
church.
Where they have to step over.
Yeah, and on the staircases. And
that's not very many people, though.
I just thought that, even in today's Manhattan, Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson would probably have like two more roommates, but. But
it's 1973. Remember, this is when Manhattan was just the worst place in the world, right? Like Escape from New York.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Let me take a little break and tell you about our sponsor. This episode of The Incomparable is brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less with no thawing required. We've gotten a Wild Grain box here at my house. And let me tell you, It's amazing. So they come as like breads. They don't come as dough. They come as breads, but they're not fully done. You put them in the oven, and when they come out, it is like you have gotten fresh baked bread. You would never tell it was from frozen. You would think that you would put dough in the oven. So good. Crispy exterior, soft interior. A bunch of different kinds of breads. Those were great. We had pastas. They're frozen, but they're frozen as freshly made pasta, so they have a completely different texture when you toss them in and cook them. We had a meal with spaghetti with the fresh pasta. It was so soft and just a totally different experience, like it was out of a pasta maker instead of dried pasta from the store. And they even had a little pastry dessert, a little apple pie pastry dessert in there too. And you don't have to, you know, spend hours waiting for the dough to rise. You just pop it in the oven, boom, you're done. You could have multiple breads for a Christmas party, let's say, something like that. Absolutely. Done in minutes. And you can now fully customize your wild grain box so you can get any combination of breads, pastas, and pastries that you like. If you want all bread, all pasta, I'm not going to judge you. And for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box. Who doesn't love free croissants? When you go to wildgrain.com/incomparable to start your subscription. That's right. I just want to say it again. Free croissants. Those are two words that go well together, I think. In every, that's another good word, box. Free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box. Why not try it? Go to wildgrain.com/incomparable. That's wildgrain.com/incomparable. Or you can use a promo code, Incomparable, when you check out. Just go to wildgrain.com, make your order, use the promo code Incomparable. That works too. Thank you, Wild Grain, for all the bread and pasta in my tummy and for sponsoring the Incomparable.
I was thinking about that Star Trek episode, which is called The Mark of Gideon, and it's from 1969. And, you know, trivia point. It was my first time ever on Random Trek. I had that episode. So it got me going on all this podcasting. But
and they did it by having like an office with a window outside.
Window.
And they packed people in front of the window and moved them around. But you never went beyond that because they couldn't afford more than the 12 people that were out there.
They made it look terrible, but they only had a window to see out of. And also they had really ridiculous outfits, but whatever, you know, that was, I was interested, you know, that because, this whole notion that it's the idea of it being so packed, you can't even move. I think Star Trek has done it best. So by doing the least.
So right. So there are, as Phil said, there is a noirish plot about our corrupt detective who still is on the case and follows a lead, and it leads to a giant conspiracy that's very bad with a powerful company. The Soylent company is involved because it turns out that this guy who was murdered to silence him because he was becoming unreliable. He squealed about what was going on. At the very least, he confessed it to his priest, but he seemed like he was unreliable and overwhelmed with guilt about what they were doing. And so they have him silenced. He pulls on that thread. It leads back to the Soylent Corporation. And that's how ultimately he finds out the horrible secret that they're processing the dead bodies into the brand new protein source, Soylent Green. If you had, spoiler alert for Soylent Green, again, it's people. It's made of people. So there's that. And then there's the really that interleaved with this setting and the observation of this is a classic kind of ecological work of science fiction from this era. You have these issues and you're trying to portray the future and what it's like, and saying the future isn't, it's futuristic in some ways, but it's not great because of all these terrible things that have happened. So many poor people, so many homeless people, there's no water, the food, there are food shortages, right? There's that scene where they're lining up for Soylent Green and the lady comes out and says, I only got half a kilo, and there's almost a riot. And then the cop's like, okay, Charlton Heston, spread the word. There's no more Soylent Green, so there's going to be a riot. So just let everybody know. I'm going to announce that in a minute. And he's like, hey, there's no more Soylent Green. And then the riot happens, right?
And so, now we are going to scoop you up in dump trucks.
Oh, that shot is so cool.
The scoops are coming.
Mm-hmm. And then, we're going to scoop. And the guy, and you know, I did not think at that moment, but then later on, I was like, Oh, it'd be a shame if somebody got smashed by a
Oh, man, is there smashing.
That kid who's not going to live to be 100, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, clearly the future came true again. Well done, Soylent Green writers. No, but my big problem with the scoops, you have to be a lazy-ass rioter
There's too many people, Phil. You can't move around.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
a
stampede situation. Yeah, You're all crushed in.
Oh, there's no room. Okay. They're very hot, and they haven't eaten.
Yeah, but the scoops look like they're made out of cardboard. I mean,
well, they're not cardboard; they're metal.
I'm
telling you,
steel.
The way they bounce around, they are at best sheet metal. They, you know, there are real devices. This is how cheap these people, this movie was made. I mean, there are actual devices that are like what this thing is supposed to be. And, they couldn't hire them, apparently. So they made these things with cheap little, there's not even any hydraulics to move the scoop.
You sure it's just not the fallen world of 2022? Can't afford good scoops?
You sure it's not just that it's a movie from 1973?
No, no.
People make good food, but they do not make good steel, apparently.
It's a cheap movie
My
from
dad
1973.
Worked at Caterpillar. Absolutely. They had scoops that were sturdier in 1973.
Okay, cheap
yes,
scoops.
Yes, I'm
then.
From a scoop. This is scoop slander in this movie.
What was scoop capacity?
And I'm here to push back. Yes.
Okay, I'll push back on your pushback. They couldn't use actual heavy machinery because it would hurt the people.
It could be.
This is a special effect.
Yeah,
it could be.
Your complaint is.
Real scoops are better.
I don't care if they hurt the people.
Oh, okay, carry on then.
All right.
So it's going to be made into food anyways.
Extras like in Metropolis, another great overpopulation movie.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Sure. That kid never acted again. Who cares?
I do like that they're dumping them into the back of the truck, and I had that thought of like, do they take those guys to the Soylent plant too? I don't know. Maybe
of course.
Probably.
Maybe they
of course
do.
They do.
I like how they use the scoops, you know, it's just like, you know, as Dr. Drang says, it's a thing we know. And also the garbage trucks, these are things that drive down our streets all the time.
Yeah.
And now I'm never going to look at them in the same way.
It's the fallen world thing too, right? Where it's like, what do they use as crowd control? Well, they use heavy machinery that was meant for something else. They use the scoops. They use the dump trucks. Garbage trucks. They're like, yeah, this is what we got. So we're using it because this whole world is messed up.
Look at the television in the apartment. It's a 1973 television. There's been no progress.
Terrible.
Wait. You mean the spherical orange television that looks amazing? Is that the television you're complaining about?
No, the CRT that Charlton Heston has.
Right. Because I just want to say that there are amazing spherical orange televisions right next to amazing spherical orange chairs in this movie. And I just wanted to shout out.
No, people had definitely watched 2001.
The art direction of the rich. This is part of the thing, right? The art direction of the rich people stuff is where it feels like the future, and I think that's interesting that the rich guy apartment has the really kind of cool equipment and the cool furniture, and of course then where Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson live is more like a tenement.
Like it's frozen in time.
Yeah.
Although I wonder how much of that was by design and how much of that was by budget. Because again, you also have apparently we stopped designing cars around about 1973 in the future because everything is a large sedan.
Yeah.
Well, Tad Fielding's apartment that we see a couple of times is classier than Charlton Heston's, but not as classy as the rich guy's. And it has some furniture. That's that's the one that has the spherical television next to a old bad oven.
Right, because he's getting paid off by Soylent. He's not just a bodyguard. He's like he's one of their operatives, and that's why he's got that sweet strawberry juice on a spoon. Right, like that's one of Charlton Heston's little tells as he goes over there and is investigating his place and talking to the lady, talking to the furniture, and it's he's doing his investigating in there. Plus, you get the kind of the sense of it. I read that one of the reviews of this movie when it came out said that they didn't like it because they're like, but what of democracy and what about women's lib and things like that? And I thought, well, yeah, that's the point, is that they don't have those. It's a dystopia.
didn't happen. We were too busy being hungry.
Like Soylent Green is not saying the women should be furniture. Soylent Green wants you to be horrified that in this world, the apartments just come with women in them.
Yeah.
And there is that scene where all they're credited. They're credited as the furniture girls at the end, which is hilarious, where Cheryl has her friends over from the building, and it's all the other women in the building, and they have that. And then the guy, the jerk who's the doorman or whatever, the manager.
Charles,
it's perfectly legal, comes in and he's like hitting them and punching them and stuff until Charlton Heston comes out of the bedroom putting his pants on. And because that also happens. So that's another form of this dystopia, is how the women are treated in it.
I think that is part that was really successful to me, not just how the women were treated, but that whole, we still have the same system. It's just more corrupt, and you see the wealth on top, mm-hmm. and you know, like it just feels like that part is still so relevant today. And you're like, yep. This is what we should be concerned about, is having a system where the wealthy get wealthier and control everything and don't give a crap about the people at the bottom and are literally eating them, you know? So that to me, I was like, that feels so real. Right. That feels like it's actually, you know, I don't know if we'll get to the point of eating other people, but there is a point where that becomes economically viable, and, you know, it felt believable to me. I'm like, we could end up in this future still if things get that bad.
I don't think the rich people were eating poor people.
No,
they don't have to, but because they can eat all the fresh food, right? But to keep the masses, and it's also a form of population control. So like, well, we have too many people. Let's just scoop them up and feed them to each other.
I like, there was one little reference to a company that had invented the process of freeze drying food. And I was like, just my 1970s antenna went right up because I was like, oh my God, freeze dried food. That was whatever fad food process we have today. And there's so many of them, but the idea that, I just remember, especially with coffee, they talked about it freeze-dried, like, and it sounded so space-age and good. And then
Tang, the orange juice that astronauts drink.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's Tang. There were space sticks. I don't know if anybody else was.
Space food only sticks. Glenn. I had them as a kid.
Those space
astronaut
food sticks.
Astronaut ice cream.
They were awful.
It's not people. That's what it's not.
Yeah.
It's not, like.
It's probably not.
Are you sure?
It's like
Are you sure?
It could have been people.
It's made from aliens. It's space
food.
You'd
never know.
Earth food is made from people.
I don't know.
But the idea of food, you know, being so engineered into like nothingness, right. Again, you know, Star Trek, I would say, you know, pioneered squares of colored food.
Oh, yeah. The colored blocks of food are right out of Star Trek. So here it's Soylent Red, Soylent Yellow, and now they've got the new Soylent Green, which is supposedly based on plankton. But as we discover, because among the things that Charlton Heston just steals from the guy's apartment are a couple of books from the Soylent survey report, I guess, that he gives to Saul. Yeah, and that is where Saul discovers that the plankton are dying off, and that they have had to find an alternate protein source, which is by diverting the dead bodies and using them.
So in addition to the furniture, they also have the people who are called books, and Saul is a book. Because there's at one point where Brock Peters says, hey, we'll get you a new book, because obviously he's going to die soon.
Right.
And Charlton Heston is, no, you can't do that. I won't let you. And, but I found that a fascinating part of the police work, that basically you get someone to do your legwork for you, and then you...
Yeah, your research.
And, yeah.
And stuff. Yeah, because he has him. He's like, well, what do you want me to look up next? There's oceanography we could look at, or we could look at biology, or we could look at this. He goes, all of it. He's like, I can't. What? I can't do that. Listen, Thorne, I can't do that. But yeah, and there's the exchange, which is like a library, but it's also sort of like where all of the knowledge is kept, that they've come up with a way to kind of like have this private library that's also the place where knowledge is exchanged. And they're the ones who are going to get the word that Soylent Green is people for what that's worth. I wanted to point out, there are a bunch of Star Trek actors in this, which I thought was fun.
There sure are.
There really are. Brock Peters, obviously, is in Star Trek IV, so he would go on to be in Star Trek. But the head of the exchange is Celia Lovsky, who was in a bunch of stuff, but she was T'Pau in Star Trek. The governor here what's his name?
Whit Bissell.
Whit Bissell.
Whit Bissell from The Trouble with Tribbles.
What's he like in that? Mm-hmm. Because in this, he's very monotone, which I thought was interesting.
He's just like a hapless guy. That's a comedy bit. So he's in Trouble with Tribbles. He's more just like, listen, Kirk, I don't want these Klingons here. Right. It's just that's sort of what he's doing in there. Also, not a Star Trek actor, but another actor that of note is appears in the second set of credits because they're not important enough to go in the first set of credits. But the man who leads our friend Saul Roth to his suicide chamber is Dick Van Patten.
Yeah.
That's a true dystopia when the last person you see is Dick Van Patten.
Well, it does lead to the wonderful moment where Charlton Heston punches Dick Van Patten and says, show me my friend. He's like, all right, okay, sorry, all right.
8 punches were enough.
There's a lot of punching. There's a lot of punching. But you're
this
right, Phil.
Pre 8 is enough for what that's worth.
Yes. you're right, Phil. This is the place where it feels the most film noir-y to me is the fact that like there's the governor, because you get that moment where you realize like, oh, this goes beyond this guy up to this corporation, but also the governor. And then they go to his boss, they go to Brock Peters and they say, close the case. Right.
Yeah.
And that's when Charlton Heston's like, I'm not going to sign it. I can't close the case. You're going to make me lie about what's going on. And I can't do it. Right. That's the most noirish part to me where he's like, they suppress the whole thing. And he's like, I can't do it. I'm corrupt, but I'm not corrupt in that way.
I was really glad that they didn't have a scene where like Charlton Heston confronts the governor or confronts someone from Soylent and it's, you don't understand, Detective Thorne.
Yes.
I like that, The powers that be were always just lurking in the background. I thought that made it more effective.
Yeah.
And that it was a less is more approach to storytelling.
Yeah, the governor's in like one scene and then you see his face on like a poster.
Yeah, or in the background TV. on the crappy CRT television set. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Charlton Heston does eventually go to the factory. So he follows, follow the dead bodies. He follows the dead body to the waste disposal plant. He sees the corpses, the wrapped corpses being chucked in a vat, basically.
Yep.
This is my argument. This movie does not have a twist ending.
No,
you see it happening right here.
It's like, very direct.
Although it is towards the end of the movie,
to the end.
But it's not. Yeah. It's not when he says it, well, this is the thing that's funny. The reason that it's actually very funny. So as Saul Roth is dying, he is going to reveal he's hearing his friend, and he's being, you know, the light classical music is playing, and he's being shown like a panorama, like he's at Disneyland or something. There's like a big projection display showing him peaceful scenes as he's drunk his poison, and he's going to pass out and die. And he knows that his friend is there, and he says, "Oh, I got to tell you something." And then the audio system goes out, so he has to listen to it on headphones, and that's very funny because the part we don't hear is the part where he says the thing about how Soylent Green is actually made of of people, because they don't want that to be the time that we have the revelation of it.
They do a similar thing when Saul is at the exchange and the exchanger telling them, we think this is what the deal is, but right. they cut away from that bit.
Exactly. Because they want the, but it's not what I thought, which is they want the audience to be in that moment where it's the twist. It's not, they want the gradual, they want you to follow him with the dead bodies to the factory, and there's the moment where they get dropped in the vat and you're like, oh boy, and then there's the conveyor belt of Soylent Green rectangles, and you're like, oh boy, okay, all right, like that's the moment. It's this gradual realization that this must be the solution. It's not that last scene where he blurts it out. That's famous, but it's not a twist. It's where the movie is going the whole time.
So I have a question for the panel at large. Did any of you see this without knowing what the ending was?
No.
Impossible.
No, I definitely knew. I was curious, like, at the time, were people surprised and did they, like, follow through or did people guess? Like, because I'm like, I wonder if I would have figured, I feel like they laid it out pretty clearly and I would have guessed it much sooner than that point. But I don't know.
But it would have been the mounting horror of the discovery, I think, would have been more effective had I not known what the final line of the movie is. Because I will tell you, this was the first time I saw this movie, and I knew what the ending was back in like 1990 because of a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was basically just an excuse for Phil Hartman to run around screaming, it's people! It's people! And yeah,
of course.
So that was what classic. What ruined me.
But what I appreciated in watching it is that it isn't just a twist where it's like, oh, it was you, you bastards, you did it, you blew it all up, right? Like it's not another Charlton Heston movie. It is that dread, and I think it's pretty good, right? Like I think it's the his friend dies, he runs there, can't stop him from killing himself, he follows the bodies, he's going to the, now he's at the factory, he's like, oh, this isn't good, right? Like the way it's done, I think is actually pretty good. And so when he blurts it out, like we all know what he's saying when he blurts it out. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I expected. And I thought it was, you know, I thought it was really effective. I gotta say, I like this movie. I think it's not great, but I think it's pretty good. I think as a sci-fi from this, especially from 50 years ago, talking about ecological issues and overpopulation, talking about the corruption of society and the stratification of society, I think that part of it is pretty well done, given their budget especially. They don't have a good scooper budget. They don't have a good overpopulation budget, but they got enough. And then I think the noirish angle with Heston is pretty good. I think... You know, I even am okay with his sort of semi romance with Cheryl. It's super weird and
that's the worst part of the movie.
It is, but like I feel like that's
effective.
It's
the interrogation.
I feel like that's effective.
They have sex during an interrogation.
Yeah, yeah, which it sort of dehumanizes, depersonalizes the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Which is the point. Yeah,
and then the guy comes over and says, "Yeah, do you like what is it? Are you fun?" Cheryl, he asks her, because sometimes...
Are you a fun girl?
Yeah, sometimes the guys come over and that's when we want you around, for fun. And it's like, it's chilling, and that's the whole point. So that part, all that commentary and the unthreading of the plot, and there's some of the action stuff which we haven't mentioned, like, I really like when the guy... The assassin from the first one is now taking his shots. He's been told to take his shots at Charlton Heston. And it's in, obviously, these huge crowds. And the assassin does not care about shooting other people. He is happy to shoot. And so many other people are shot to death as he tries to shoot Charlton Heston, who is wearing, by the way, his police helmet, which is a football helmet.
Which is fantastic.
Which is amazing. Max Headroom did that. And I didn't realize it for all these years that was almost... certainly a Soylent Green reference they were making, cops wearing football helmets. So, in the end, you know, again, it's like, yeah, okay, Soylent Green is people. He says it at the end, but like, by the time it gets there, I've seen the journey that character's on. So I don't know. I thought this was a pretty effective movie, and I think it's, is it a classic? Well, probably not, but I think it's pretty good for what it's trying to do. And that it's, I actually felt that I felt a little bit sad that all people ever know about it is the last line of the movie, because it I think earns that last line, but you have to watch the rest of the movie to get there.
I like this movie a lot. I thought this was a very good movie.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, I did spend a year watching post-apocalyptic movies,
right,
which are almost uniformly terrible. So seeing a movie that isn't like Escape from the Bronx.
You take that back about Hell Comes to Frog Town.
Look, this movie had a point of view, which a lot of, especially science fiction movies from the 70s, didn't. I thought the scoopers looked great. I thought it was chilling seeing those people just being scooped up and dumped in the back. I thought this was a very good movie. And it's a shame that the final line is so iconic. But on the other hand, you know,
got us to watch the movie.
That keeps the movie alive in people's memories in some way.
Did anybody watch it before this podcast?
No.
Had anybody seen it?
No.
Yes.
Dr. Dre.
Okay. Mm,
interesting.
Yeah,
I would have
did
seen
it.
Did
you see it when you were a kid? Because I did not.
I didn't see it when it came out. So my first exposure to it would have been on, commercial TV, whenever it came out on TV. But by that time, of course, I already knew that Soylent Green was people.
Yeah.
So
it still
wasn't a surprise.
Yeah. I feel like we knew what Soylent Green was immediately. Yeah. Like, practically from the title. Just it's like, what else can it be in this this era, of weird, twisted, movies and social commentary? But I've been wondering that myself, though. Did anybody go see it in the theater back in the day, aside from like opening night or something, that didn't already know?
The commercials were all, what is the secret of Soylent Green? Yeah. So they were playing it up pretty hard.
Yeah, that's the
trailer.
Were.
The trailer was, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I'm sure that the audiences in 73 were probably unlikely to know the secret and got that as that creeping dread. Like, again, I think creeping dread is a pretty great thing for a movie to give you. And this movie does it. Like, you're like, oh, no. And I knew it was people, but I'm still like, oh, he's riding that truck into the factory. He's like, oh, this is not. Let's watch the bodies going by one by one. You're like, oh, no. It's very effective. But yeah, what would it have been like to be surprised? I don't know.
I would like to see it remade just for... We learned about pacing a little bit better in the ensuing 50 years since that movie came out. I'd like to see it without some of the garish 70s hairdos that managed to survive
the apocalypse.
Yes, exactly.
I had that same thought, which is, it's what we've been saying here. It's not as if the topics of this movie are no longer relevant.
Absolutely like, not. Right. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Pretty
one
good.
Of the things that made this movie stick with me in a way that I wouldn't have expected it to was that the themes and topics are very relevant.
Yeah.
I would also like to see them choose different locations, because the Soylent facility is the Chevron processing plant in El Segundo that I used to live next to.
And,
had I only known what was going on there, I could have stopped it, damn it.
You could have picketed with a sign that says, it's people.
Please stop killing people and turning them into food. Plus, the Euthanasia Center is the LA Sports Arena.
That's big.
And yeah. It was the home of the Clippers, which would make you want to die. So.
It's fitting. It is fitting.
I have a confession. So I thought there were aliens involved in this movie.
Oh.
So I was waiting for the alien twist. And I was like, oh, wait. It took me about the half the movie to realize I think I'm mixing up the miniseries V, which I love, with this.
Maybe
movie,
that
and
Twilight
no
Zone
aliens.
Episode 2, How to Serve People?
Yeah.
To serve man. To serve man.
Oh, Detective Thorne, you don't understand. We're all lizard people.
So I was like, when are they whipping off the mask? And we find out that the governor is an alien. It's like, so it did take at least a third to a half of the movie before I was like,
I think it's that.
This is not the movie I thought it was going to be. But I didn't think knowing the end reduced the tension. I was a little confused at first. But once I got past that, I think it still holds up as an interesting movie because it earns that ending and drags us through. And you're like counting up, well, they're Soylent now, they're Soylent now, they're Soylent now. So
yeah, every scoop. It's more yep, Soylent
every
Green.
Scoop, every murder victim. I'm sure he scoops.
Why
you
is it
to pay
you know
extra?
That, there's that meme about the like sci-fi writer who wrote the book "Don't Create the Torment Nexus" because you shouldn't create the Torment Nexus, and then the tech bros are like, "Good news, everybody, we created the Torment Nexus," and the sci-fi writer is like, "Oh no,
don't do it."
It's a little like that where the tech bros are like, "You know what would be a good name for our protein drink that you can subsist on? Let's call it Soylent." You're like, "What are you doing? Why?
Nick was obsessed with it.
What are you doing?"
There's a great bit in the IMDb trivia that says, "To date, Soylent does not contain people."
It's a great caveat.
We have optimism there.
I'm going to throw this out right now. In the original book, Make Room, Soylent is just soy and lentils.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
That makes sense.
They're like, let's just...
That's so logical.
Yeah, but do you think that's what Soylent Red and Soylent Yellow are, or are Soylent Red and Soylent Yellow also people? And if so, how come Soylent Green is tasteless and odorless? Why don't they make it taste better?
They suggest that Soylent Pink is soybean.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
But of course they say Soylent Green is plankton, and they're lying about that.
So. But it sounds like it was originally plankton, and then they ran out of plankton.
Yeah.
So yeah,
they
as you
still
do,
have green food
they
color.
Ran out of plankton. That's
yeah, because
be
there's
a
die off in
the
ocean.
For
the
planet.
It's part of the ecological. You get the sense that this is hairspray.
I bet this
is a world that is 30 years away from being the road. Like everything is going to die because the whole ecology is collapsing, but it hasn't collapsed yet. But if the oceans are dying off, right? Like this is a bad sign for the food sources of humanity. But they're not quite there yet.
There's a great line, "We'll make it cold like winter used to be."
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's always a heat wave, she says at one point. I'm like, oh, really? Always a heat wave, you say? Oh, huh. Oh, imagine that. Huh.
Well, I like that they don't understand that winter will still be cold. It'll just be colder. The greenhouse effect isn't necessarily always hot.
Yeah, we know more about massive climate change problems than the movie from 50 years ago. Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Why? Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing about the plankton, I mean, if the plankton are dead, you got a bigger problem than food. You don't have any oxygen anymore. but, you know, the thing about the slow motion death of the world, it's not that slow motion. In that, how much older is Edward G. Robinson than Charlton Heston in this movie, their characters? 30 years?
30
maybe
years.
35?
Yeah, but they do have that. 30. There is dialogue where he's like, that Saul remembers stuff that is
he does,
like normal that Thorne doesn't.
In my head canon, Saul's in his 70s because he would have been born in the 1940s like my dad. And be about in his late 70s, early 80s by the time this movie rolls around.
Yeah, I'm confused because I did read Make Room.
And I feel like Charlton Heston is basically
Saul
my
is 75
age.
In the book.
Yeah, I have a 40-year-old, 50-year-old man. Yeah.
Yeah. So why does Charlton Heston has no memory of any of these things. He's never seen any of these things at all.
Never seen a deer.
It's like Han Solo thinking that Jedi are just a myth.
Because things started going to pot about 1970, in the mid-70s.
73.
I guess. but they must have gone to pot really fast because...
Well, that's true.
You know, it's a guy, 30, 35 years younger who's never seen anything compared to a person who remembers it all.
Yeah, slow apocalypse is still, over 10 years even, or 20 years, and this is like, whatever, 30 or 40 years into the apocalypse, and it's all just sort of like crept worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not like a bomb went off.
Yeah.
It's not that kind of apocalypse. Yeah. But it's still pretty fast.
Ecological collapse.
What if Heston has lived in Manhattan all his life, but Saul used to live somewhere else?
That could be. Could be.
Because then you're like, tree? What's a tree?
Mm-hmm. Hey, I got another question for the panel.
Uh-huh.
Ignore Central Park.
Do you think Brock Peters did anything after Charlton Heston says, go tell everyone that it's...
Well, this is...
No.
No.
100%.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, absolutely not. Okay, we're all agreed.
I think yeah. I love how the ending doesn't tell you anything. I do think, though, he did shout it to a whole room of people. Mm-hmm. And the exchange knows. So it's yeah. not... They're going to have to do a lot of covering up. Or it's out there, but the movie is not. But Brock Peters has gotten his marching orders, right? He's not going to do anything about this.
Yeah.
Right.
He stops eating Soylent Green.
That's what he does. That's, he makes a personal change to his life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I mean,
he starts eating healthily.
You want some green? Oh, no. I'm only doing yellow these days. This is better for my stomach.
It's more my flavor.
But, you know, scooping up the people in the church. And was that where the shootout was finally?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you scoop up the people in the church, boom, they're done. The elders or the books, they're no trouble to
you
pick
clear
up.
Clear them out. Yeah.
Because they're all attached to a police officer, right?
But it's like if you can clean it up. What I like about the ending is like this is out there now and it might spread. But it also might not. And you can take
it's
it
all
however
up to you,
you want.
Audience member.
Yes. I think the credits are a tell that they go with the credits of the scenes that Saul was seeing when he was dying. It's basically, you're all dead.
Now you're all dead.
All of you're
no,
dead.
Because I watched this on Max, a bad app on my television, and it does not show me the closing credits.
Oh, that's terrible. Oh.
No. You've got to physically move the thing up to the...
I did, and I click it, and I just get a black screen. That's what Max does when I try to watch the closing credits of anything on the bad app
terrible.
Max.
That's terrible.
Clearly the worst thing that Zaslav has ever done.
So it is, Monty. You get to watch over the credits. You get to watch what Saul watched as he died. They play that again. So that you can see it as you die in the theater at the end of Soylent Green. Yeah.
Not to be a pessimist, but don't you think even if it got out there based on recent events, people would still eat Soylent Green and still do nothing about it?
Absolutely.
That's what they're like, well, we have no food if we don't eat the Soylent Green and it's so processed. I can forget that it's people and people are still going to eat it. Or they will not forget it, or it'll be, you know, like just, it won't make a difference. And
this place is doomed.
Yeah, we're just doomed.
This is going to a Mad Max world.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's our world because as we saw a couple of years ago, you know, those people were going to die anyway.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, like, I think they won't care.
At least,
they'll eat it.
You know, Soylent Green makes it, you know, there's some benefit to their death.
Right, the rest of us don't starve.
Yeah.
Did Saul go to his death knowing he would become Soylent?
Yes.
I feel like he
did.
Yes,
because he got the word from the exchange.
Yes, because
he did the research and everything.
He tells Thorne,
And he tells Thorne, during that part where we can't hear.
Right. He whispers it to him. So that was what drives him, that's the amazing thing, right, is like Saul, which again, I'll point out, legendary actor Edward G. Robinson, who is dying of cancer while making this movie and apparently was very professional about it. And then he has this death scene. But the way it's written is like he finds out that Soylent Green is people and he's like, that's it.
I'm done.
He says he writes to Thorne. He's like, I'm going home. He's like, I am leaving. I'm done with this planet. This is the worst. Goodbye. And he goes and he's like, orange. Sure. Orange is my favorite color. Whatever. Just plug me into the thing, please. And that's the end of Saul.
Mm-hmm.
I did feel good for those guys that Thord was throwing over the side of the railing at the Soylent facility because less time for them to travel.
Oh, yeah, they don't have to leave the building. They go
right
back
there.
The one guy just lands on the conveyor belt. So that is I guess he's with the wafers. They're going to have to take him off.
Yeah, it's inefficient.
Put him in the vat.
He's going to get
instead.
Wrapped up or something.
They have extra fiber because there's clothes and sheets on everyone. They just don't even unwrap them.
Yeah.
Just throw everything in.
I thought of
it's
that
all
too.
Food.
I think it's like a dissolving, okay. like a maybe like a sort yeah. of paper-based substance that they're wrapped in that they will dissolve in it. Because if it's like a plastic bag, like what are you doing? But they know they need to.
No, it seems fabric, right? Like
yeah maybe it is. Like it dissolves in the vat. Dissolves in the
it's
vat.
It's just cotton. We
right.
eat cotton.
They know we'll eat anything, so.
So Soylent Green is people and the bag we put the people in?
Yes.
Yes. Sure. And their clothes.
Yes, that was
their shoes.
That was the original
whatever.
Line of dialogue, but they found that too.
It's a little wordy.
Didn't test well.
Soylent Green is people and people's wallets.
Their glasses.
Seems weird, right? Yeah. Well, we have a. No. I just want to say. Hello, I'm the CEO of Soylent Corporation, and I want to clear up a few things about misconceptions about Soylent. We have large filters that clean out all of the body bags, the glasses, the pocket change, leaving only the human bodies to be the source of Soylent Green. Just want to be clear about that. Only the finest human bodies are used.
What about
Thank
prosthetics?
You. They're filtered out. Take my penknife, my good man.
I don't want to eat Charles. Charles is a jerk.
By the time we get him, he's not Charles anymore.
He deserves to be eaten. I'd rather
Charles will be eaten at one of the fun parties in his building.
Charles, you know, by the way, is the actor from
yes,
Willy Wonka.
Mr. Beauregard
was
yes.
the dad. The dad of the girl who turned
Violet
into a
Bogart's
big blueberry.
Dad,
yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it is. It is.
That's just, so I don't know, weirdly troubling. Ironic. She turned into a food. Their movie is about food. Whatever.
All right. I see where you're going.
That is like IMDb trivia. Ironically.
Right.
Gene, yeah. You have to get in there and write that.
Yeah, that's right. That
I will get like that. Only
3
like,
million IMDb readers found that useful.
Yeah.
Out of 6 million.
Solid. Yeah, it's still pretty good. Still pretty good. I don't know, Dr. Drang, I don't know if we heard from you with your overall feelings about it. Everybody else has been pretty positive. Your feelings about this movie, this famous movie for the end, but it is a whole movie. How do you feel about it?
I did like the movie, and you know, I have not seen it since I think the late 70s, whenever it was that I saw it on TV. But it was surprisingly good. You know, science fiction movies, as I think Monty said, from this era are generally terrible. all the pre-Star Wars stuff was terrible.
Yeah, eat it, Silent Running.
A lot of it. Well, there. I mean, there are exceptions, but 2001 might be considered.
Solaris
a good movie.
Has entered the
but,
chat.
You know, but it was they were not taken seriously, and the special effects were terrible because people couldn't make good special effects, and producers were afraid to spend money to get decent ones, so they were bad. What I was really surprised about was that I thought Charlton Heston did a good job in this movie.
Yeah.
I thought he's excellent at playing a jerk, and maybe that's the same reason that Marilyn Monroe is great at playing a pretty woman, but still he does a great job, because I was expecting, you know, not having seen it for 40 some years, I was expecting Edward G. Robinson to just blow him off the screen, and he doesn't. I mean, Edward G. Robinson does a great job in this movie.
Yeah.
He's excellent as Saul. Mm-hmm. But Charlton Heston, when he's swaggering around and taking the food and taking whatever it is, a pillowcase and stuffing it with all his loot as he leaves the apartment, that's just, it's good. Chuck Connors, I think they did, I mean, he's bad, but they keep him in a cage, right? Yeah. He's well directed in this movie. He's well used.
He is a thug, right? Like the character is a good fit for Chuck Connors' skills.
And he's a big guy to match up with Charlton Heston in fight scenes and stuff like that. It's surprisingly well acted for us, and again, for a science fiction movie, which we're not known for good acting.
Charlton Heston is one of our greatest terrible actors.
Yeah, when he's used right. It turns out, you see a lot of these movies and you realize there are people who are not actors with lots of range who can be really good if they're given the right material.
Yep.
And really bad when they are asked to do something that they can't do. And this is a movie, I agree with Dr. Drang, this is a really good fit for Charlton Heston. He is bombastic. He is naturalistic in many ways, right? He's just like a guy who's trying to make his way, and he's aggressive.
There was a reason they kept casting him in movies like this. Like,
exactly.
Like Omega Man and Planet of the Apes. Yeah, sure.
There's absolutely. Yeah. I wanted to mention Lee Taylor Young, who plays Cheryl. I think she does a really, I think, first off, she's super kind of likable, but I think she does a pretty good job of kind of toggling between this is my job as furniture and I am also a human being under here who's been forced to be in this position. And there are moments where you see her kind of go from one to the other. And it's a tough role because her role is to be a less of a character and more of a social commentary, but I think she brings some good stuff to that part too.
And apparently one of two cast members who lived to 2022. So there you go.
Look at that.
I discovered that I can't tell the difference between Chuck Connor and Charlton Heston, which made the beginning of this movie very confusing.
Wow. Yeah.
They're just enormous chin
dudes. It's the neckerchief. That's how you tell between the two.
I had a problem with that too, and I said, at one point I got to like, I said, that's really weird that Charlton Heston set up this whole murder and now he's solving it. He's doing a good job of pretending that he doesn't know what happened. And then at one point I said, no, you just can't, you know, it's like, I mean, the quality it's of
too many
the,
chucks again.
The film.
Too many
There's
chucks.
Too many chucks. And also that's like, you know, the color and the lighting and everything doesn't make it easy to distinguish things. But okay, thank you for saying that, because I was like, when Annette confessed her confession, I was about to go with mine, which was
I was confused for
the first third.
Okay, go for it, Annette.
That was me in the movie Heat. I thought, I can't even remember the two actors who are the main character. It took me 50% of the movie until they were in the same room.
Like Al Pacino and Robert De Niro?
I totally didn't. I couldn't tell
they
the apart.
Very similar energies, guys.
And I was like,
that's why they're never in movies together.
Exactly. They're two different people. I was so confused.
He's like Annette's kryptonite, right? Because it's like, finally, these two actors are together. And Annette's like, no, don't do it. Don't do that. I can't tell them apart. Why are they like, in the same movie now?
I implore you not to go see Righteous Kill.
I will not. Are they both in it?
Yes.
Nick makes fun of me still to this day because I was like, I just didn't see it. And it's like half the movie before they are in the same room.
You know the movie The Prestige?
Yes.
I cannot identify Christian Bale at the best of times. In that movie, I got him and Hugh Jackman confused constantly.
Wow.
Which
that movie
makes
is
a
hard.
Very confusing.
That movie, is confusing enough without really confusing the actors.
Yeah, but it did mean, it also meant that I could see the twist because I was like, well, that guy over there is Hugh Jackman too. So what's going on?
Yeah. Amazing.
I love it.
Yeah. Soylent Green, it's a good movie. Like, I don't know what to say. Like, I really went into it. I just saw Annette last week and we were talking about this movie and was like, I don't know, is it gonna be good, is it gonna be bad? And I said, I think people like it, but it doesn't get talked about a lot. And so 50 years on, here we are talking about it. It only gets referenced as that line. And as a sci-fi movie, I agree with Dr. Drang, there are a lot of really humdrum 70s sci-fi movies that are, you know, they're either the, like 2001's an exception, but there are the kind of airless space movies where they've got Doug Trumbull in there to do some spaceships, but like the movie isn't very interesting. Or they're the apocalyptic, like your Logan's Run kind of
Logan's
things.
Run.
Those
ZPG.
Are your
ZPG.
Choices. And this movie actually is more like a sci-fi movie crossed with one of those smelly 70s movies, you're taking a Pelham 1-2-3 kind of thing. Like, it's got a little injection of the right, because some of those 70s sci-fi movies, there's like everything is white, It's white spaceships. Yeah. It's white corridors and all of that. Whereas so much 70s cinema is shaggy and smelly and messy. And Soylent Green is messy and yet also a sci-fi. And like, it's like a really good mixture of some good things about 70s movies, most of which I've seen because Phil made me watch them for this podcast, and kind of sci-fi thoughts of the late 60s and early 70s. And like, yeah, it's a good movie. I also think it's funny that I was looking up. So Stanley Greenberg is the writer, the screenwriter, and he wrote almost nothing.
He did a lot of TV.
Yeah. And Richard Fleischer is the director, and he directed lots of stuff, right? He directed Dr. Doolittle and Fantastic Voyage. That's a terrible movie.
It is such a varied career because Red Sonja's Richard Fleischer. 20,000 Leagues.
Yeah. Max Fleischer's son.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Interesting. Yeah. Tora, 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 which was always on Dialing for Dollars on Channel 2. It was always Tora, Tora, Tora. Three exclamation points in that movie title. So yeah, just all over the place. But so it's not like you can say, what was funny is when I looked it up, I thought, oh, this is going to be directed by or written by someone where you're going to be like, oh, of course. And it's not. It's people I basically never heard of. But it's a good movie. What can I say? People, listeners, go watch Soylent Green. It's people, but also it's a good movie. It's enjoyable. I was 97 minutes long. Doesn't that overstay its welcome?
No.
It could be better paced, but for a movie from 50 years ago, has a pretty decent narrative drive. Like Heston is on the screen for almost the entire movie and is super charismatic as he's bumping into things and punching people and doing what he needs to do, stealing stuff from the crime scene.
I like watching Charlton Heston do stuff on screen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the part that's slow is after Saul is dead. And it's the part going through the machinery of the processing plant.
Yeah, that needed some cuts.
That needs to be sped up a little bit. But honestly, before then, you know, it's a detective story to some extent. I mean, again, we as the audience, in a Columbo style, we as the audience know who did it and sort of what's going on. Although we don't know that Soylent Green is people until we're further along in the movie, but. Yeah, I think the part up to Saul taking himself to giving himself over to Dick Van Patten, up until that, I think it's quite well paced, and it's just that last bit that drags. Because again, anybody who's watching it now, and I would say anyone who watched it after 1973 and a half, whatever, you know, knows at that point, get to the goddamn line. Okay. Right. It's we want to hear it now. And I think if you were watching it on TV, you look at the clock and say, wait a minute, there's another half hour of this movie left. And if you're watching it now on your iPad, like I did, you click on it so that the cursor shows up and you say, what the hell? Why isn't that thing all the way over to the right yet? Got to go through a lot more tubes and piping and stuff like that and conveyor belts.
So the way it should end is that Saul should just shout without the crackling audio, Soylent Green is people, and then Charlton Heston can say, oh, you bastards, you did it. You made food out of people. No! The end. The end. That's it.
They have to show the factory.
That's, yeah, they do. They do. Know. Again, I like the creeping dread about that. I admit that there's a lot of factory, but I did like the creeping dread as you're like, and this is where, it's almost like you're taking the Soylent Green factory tour, which don't take the Soylent Green factory
tour.
Don't
have the samples, oh God, no.
I will say this. I've seen a lot of movies where there's a big final sequence in a factory. This is the only time I've understood how the factory worked from top to bottom.
I love it.
Yeah. Actually, Monty, I will just say, they go from bodies in a vat to perfectly shaped squares. I had that thought of like, could we have an interim step with some sort of, you know, slurry? But no, we cannot.
Well, in the show, how it's made, they definitely would have done that. They would have showed you every step.
How it's made.
They also looked really
green.
Plastic.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's It's the Keebler Elves' darkest secret.
One thing that jumped out at me with that whole thing, maybe because I was bored, but I was like, wow, they didn't think we would have like security cameras in the future.
Right.
You know, post it everywhere in this society where supposedly they're so, you know, concerned.
They have them in the
rich
people's houses, but not at the factory.
Not in the elevator, like, apparently. Like, they never knew who the kill. They didn't have like elevator, you know, video footage.
But the cameras were down, right?
That was sabotaged or something.
Yeah, that was one of the proof that it was. That's how Charlton Heston knew it was a conspiracy. Is that like 2 days before the security went down for the first time in 2 years?
Oh,
he
was
I missed that detail.
When I thought that Charlton Heston had done it,
you have to go watch it again.
My favorite thing of them missing a prediction is when Charlton Heston tries to call into the police station, but the circuit is in use, so he can't.
It's like he's on a party line.
That's great. Well, it's a dystopia. A lot of things have fallen apart and things that didn't get invented and all of that.
They had cell phones, but they no longer do because the cell networks are down.
The idea is that society peaks at 1973 starts declining.
Yeah, I think that's it. Which helps on the budget because you don't have to invent very much that's new other than that Pong Asteroids game, which feels very Atari 2600 to me with the big numbers and everything. That was the first
coin-operated video game.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And it rules. I love its shape, the lines.
Looks
The curves.
Looks good. Yeah. She's good at it too. She got a five with one shot or something like that. Like, hey, old rich guy, do you want to play? No. I'm sad because of Soylent Green.
Soylent Green has driven me mad.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Just hit me with that, your crowbar. I don't care. Dig a hole. I'll jump in.
Knowing there's like, this is this like very peaceful assisted suicide center, I think I would have chosen to do that rather than wait for someone to beam me in the head with a crowbar.
He could have seen the movies about the deer.
Exactly.
But that would mean that would mean lessening his time as a rich person.
As a rich person,
you just want to be as rich as possible, as long as possible.
He probably knew that Dick Van Patten was there and didn't want to face it.
No.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm. I can relate. Any final thoughts about Soylent Green before we wrap it up? Now's your chance.
I do adore how in the fight scene in the church that people are just, yeah, oh, you bumped into my bed. How dare you?
Nobody tries to stop those guys from punching and shooting.
Nobody is stopping them or running away, even when there are gunshots.
I think killing that priest in the middle of confession is a bad idea, and he will be found out immediately
when
the next person goes in there.
The lady's just going to go in there and find a dead priest. Or maybe a bullet hole. Yeah. I had that same thought, which is that was not smart by Chuck Connors to do it that way, but I guess he gets away. The good thing about overpopulation is it's easy to get lost in a crowd.
Mm.
In fact, Charlton Heston, that's a nice moment where he takes his football helmet off. He's like, "You'll never notice me now because all the other cops have their football helmets on." He's like, "Aha, now I have the element of surprise." Briefly. And human shields all around me because that guy will just shoot anybody. That guy, he didn't make it. He got crushed by a scooper. That was good, too, because that was actually the crushed by a scooper was a good moment, too, because it's like, finally, Charlton Heston's going to get to the bottom of this because he's going to pump this guy for information, like who sent you and what's the deal. It's like, nope, he got crushed by the scooper. He's just smooshed now.
Red pancake.
Yeah.
What does like a grapefruit mean?
He's talking about her boobs.
He's talking about her boobs. Oh. Yeah, I was gonna.
Got it. Thanks.
I hesitated to say.
No, I'm here for you. I'm here for all.
I was hoping one of the two women would come in and say that.
I forgot where that came from.
I just don't
care about.
He's
boobs,
describing
so
it, Cheryl to Saul, and
There's a helpful hand gesture he makes to make the point.
Yeah. He says, like Saul to the chief detective.
Oh, to Brock Peters, right. He's like a grapefruit. Yeah. And he's like, you haven't seen a grapefruit. And he's like, yeah, but you gotta, right. That's what
he's seen a picture. They're round.
But he hasn't seen a grapefruit. You see, that's the tragedy of that moment. It's like, how do you describe the woman's breasts if you have never seen
fruit?
And you could say bags of sand.
Really makes you... That's it. Yeah, that's it. Like a couple of sandbags.
Like bags of sand.
Oh, man. It's Soylent Green. People should check it out. Let me thank my panel for discussing a 50-year-old movie with me, as we sometimes do here, because anniversaries are reasons to talk about old movies. Annette Weirstra, thank you so much. It's People. We did it. We watched it. It was pretty good.
I know. I'm glad I watched it, because it's one of those cultural touchstones that I feel like I fully understand now, and there are no aliens.
And you can watch V whenever you want.
Exactly. I should. I love V.
Yeah, it's great. G. McDonald, thank you for suggesting that we do this, because otherwise you and I would not have seen this movie, and it was fun.
Well, yeah, thanks for being game to do it, and I'm pretty glad, I think, that 13-year-old me didn't go to see this in the theater. That's what I was thinking throughout, and right. Part, you know, but I'm glad I saw it now, because I can be here with you guys and make fun of it.
It's not as scary as The Exorcist, so it's got that going for it.
No.
Monty Ashley, thank you.
But where are my cool round mod chairs? That's all I want.
It's a good question. It's a good question. Dr. Drang, thank you.
Well, thank you, Jason. And you're a hell of a piece of furniture.
And Philip Michaels, I know you didn't pick the movie, but thank you for still coming on a ride on the old movie club train to the 70s. One of your favorite eras, I know, for old movies.
Yeah, it is. And Dr. Drain stole my exit line, goddammit. So slink off off to the LA sports arena to be put to death.
That's right. Enjoy your panoramic film about deer.
Yes.
And your light classical
Sondheim
music.
Musicals play.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Serve you for dinner.
Imagine that scene if he had said, "Classic rock." Like, well, okay, all right, we can do that too. Sure, it's fine. Well, all right. Thank you to everybody out there for listening to this episode of The Incomparable. I just remind you, podcasts are made of people too. We'll see you next time.